Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. This is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hattie Hatt. Miss Broussard, if you're feeling just beautiful, the weather is looking so lovely outside.
It is.
And you know, these beautiful days don't come by that often. So I'm really happy.
And you know what else? We just have to be really grateful for the small things.
We really do. Point. So yeah, I'm feeling good.
Yes, I'm feeling good too. And today we're going to do our updates, but we're going to have like a theme kind of attached to our updates. And so instead of a normal update, we're actually going to share one of our most memorable moments from when we were in school. So I have like three options, but I'm gonna choose the Peach Brown story because I'm sure this will touch my mom's heart. So I'm Black, yes. Both my parents are Black, although people would say I look racially ambiguous. And I went to predominantly white schools when I was, well, before Howard. So in elementary school, I had friends and I had like a best friend and her name was Tiffany. Tiffany Miller, actually, I remember her whole name. And she was some type of Asian. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but she was like a darker toned Asian. Mm-hmm. And I went home one day, and we used to have this long commute because we went to school in Palo Alto, but we lived in San Leandro and we had to go over the Dunbarton Bridge for all my Bay Area folk. Yeah. LA cast don't know nothing about that. But anyways. So I was like, I don't know if I was in the car, but I remember my mom was telling me that I was trying to explain to her my friend. I'm like, Mom, Tiffany. And she's like, I don't know who Tiffany is. I'm like, Mom. And I'm getting frustrated, like, Mom, she's peach brown like me. My mom's asking what she looks like. She's peach brown like me.
I love that explanation.
And I was trying to give her a color, right?
Right.
Mind you, me and Tiffany were not the same color. She was like browner,
right?
But we weren't the same color. But I saw us as the same color, and I said that we were peach brown. So to this day, my mom just sent me something the other day, like on Instagram, there's like crayons of skin colors around the world. I'm like, this isn't a new concept, but she sent it to me. She's like, oh, peach brown. So
that's amazing, and I like
brown story.
I do like that fact that you talked about the peach brown. That, you know, you were very creative.
Right?
Peach brown.
I was peach brown.
And that melanin complex, you were like, nope, we are the same color.
Yeah, I was like, same color. But we are not. We are not.
So my story has to deal with the choir. So many, many years ago in elementary school, I don't think I've ever told you this, but I was a part of our choir, our elementary school choir. And so every year we would do some type, we performances normally would like go around holiday concerts, basically.
Oh, yes.
And so every year I used to look forward to being a soloist in the choir. But it's so interesting because I would try out for the solo and I would get it. But looking back, I don't really feel like I like gave the solo like my best, you know? Like, and I really wonder sometimes, like, had I given that solo my best, like, would I be an artist, a singer right now?
I know that feeling.
Because I feel like your voice kind of forms around that time. And so like, if you're not really practicing your vocal abilities, then you kind of like just lose it. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting because I feel like I could have been a singer. I could have been a singer.
You could have been a singer, Jahad. Yeah.
So yeah, that's my story.
You would have took your life seriously.
Right. I was playing. But shout out to Mr. Lee and Mrs. Lee who ran our choir at Cecilia Lucero Solorio Elementary School.
Not the whole elementary school name.
We love it. Were you looking up?
I was trying to look Tiffany up. I'm on Facebook Miller. Trying to look up Tiffany Miller, but I don't think that this is her because this girl looks not like her. But I am gonna find her and I will show Jahad so that y'all can. Well, he can know what color.
All right, Peach Brown.
Thanks for listening to our update.
And now it's time for us to jump into our segments. The first segment that we're gonna jump into today is terminology time. And so this is going to be important for us to talk about because we're going to really go dive deep into the IEP process today. And so it's going to be important for you to know this term for the concept development. So the first phase of an IEP process is the evaluation. And it's a step in the IEP process where the parent decides whether or not they want their student to be tested based on a referral. So nothing moves forward without the parent's consent. And this is basically where we decide on what disability the child has. And that is our terminology time for today.
And on to the next segment, we love the kid. So since we're going to be talking about IEPs today, I decided to talk about a funny situation that happened with a student who had an IEP. So this student had an emotional disturbance disorder. And so what that looks like in the classroom and school setting is like crazy outbursts, flipping desk, and also will look like this scenario that I'm about to describe. So again, this is We Love the Kids.
We love the kids.
Even when they do crazy stuff. So me and this little boy, we used to get along, but we stopped getting along. And like, just realistically, it's not nothing on like a petty adult type of situation.
Right.
What we have to remember as educators and people from the outside looking in is that there are literally people that you see every day and your personalities don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not exclusive to adults, adult relationships or children relationships. There are some adult personalities that do not fit well with certain kid personalities because mm-hmm. personalities aren't based on age. Okay.
Right.
So me and this boy, I'm gonna call him Cam. Me and Cam did not have a good relationship because he would always wild out.
Yeah.
He was always wilding out. And I'm like, look, Cam, I know you have ED. I know you've been diagnosed with that, but this is not that.
Right.
You are just acting up for some reason. And I was just not going to enable him to act up because he could do better every time. You yes. know who I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
He could do better, right? So I don't know what he was mad at, but we was at lunch and he was sitting down. And I probably said he couldn't do something. And he like got up and walked away. Mind you, I think he wanted to sit next to certain people. But I'm like, you can't because you always turn up when right. you're around them. So you have to sit next to these people. Everybody had an assigned seat at this point. So I think he was mad and he like gets up and I'm like, Cam, sit down. No, I'm not sitting down. I'm like, what? I'm like, just sit down. He's like, no, bitch. And I was like, I know I'm not hearing correctly. But then, some kid was like, no, Miss Lindsay, he called you. I said, what did you say? He turned around real slow, like Matrix type slow. And he was like, bitch. And I almost lost my mind. I was on my mind. But I didn't because there was a staff male that was there and he swooped in and intercepted, got the little boy, took him to the behavior support room. Because I'm like, what?
Yeah. Those moments test your patience.
They test my patience. I had to take a little break because I'm like, you are so disrespectful.
Right.
And this is not... Everything can't be ED.
No.
It can't be.
But I think that you really did call it out, the fact that you know that child is capable, and a lot of individuals, because students have disabilities, they like to enable them. And that's something that I tried my best to do when I was in the classroom. Like, I don't care what's going on. It's not even about going toe-to-toe. It's about you knowing that your disability isn't a tool to enable your behavior.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You are still capable to be held to high expectations, and you still can do the work. So,
and he knew that. This very specific student was fully, he was very aware.
He's very self-aware.
That's why we got along at the beginning.
Right. He knew what he was doing.
He got in above his head.
Exactly.
And I was not the one. Cut the noise. Cut the noise, cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. Key is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, hey, a queen of unboxing, and a lupus survivor. And Key is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Kian Cole. Let me spell it out for you. KianaCole. You can also find Kicking It with Key on Instagram at KickingItWithKey_. I'm going to spell that out for you too. KICKINITWITHKI_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life.
Alrighty, so now it's time for us to jump into the concept development today. So we're now entering the segment of the episode in which we get into the main topic. So you're now listening to the third episode of our mini-series centered around special education. And today we will be discussing IEPs, or the Individualized Education Plan process.
Special education, and now IEPs, carry a strong stigma when heard by the untrained ear. We believe that people tend to be anti-IEP because they see it as a way that the school system is taking control over their child and their child's education. Or they believe that their child will have a label forever, when really, from our perspective, an IEP is a legally binding agreement that gives parents and families increased autonomy over the child's learning. It's like having a big meeting to talk about the fact that your child learns differently. And then all stakeholders, so psychologists, sometimes a principal, all the teachers that they deal with, and a couple others, including the family. So it could really be like 10 people in that meeting, honestly.
Yep.
All of those stakeholders come together and they spend some intentional time creating a plan that's specific for your child. So through our discourse today, we are going to try and dispel some of those myths that special education carry, but especially IEPs. And we're going to start by talking about the whole referral and evaluation process.
Yes. So referral to evaluation. And so I know that we've been talking a lot in the previous episodes about this RTI model, but just to like kind of bring it back down to earth, this is basically, we're now to the phase where the teacher's kind of done everything that she or he can at this point. We've been in meetings. We've been trying to make sure that the student is really understanding the way that different skills are being taught, and that the problem isn't just the teacher, and that it is, in fact, something that the student isn't able to access. And so at this point, referral to evaluation basically means that the teacher's done all that they can outside of referral. So now they're going to refer the student to the IEP process.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes parents also can refer or say something, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So teachers as well as parents can raise mm-hmm. concerns. And this is why it's so important for teachers as well as parents to be on the same page.
Yeah.
So that if the student may be struggling, for instance, on a math project or math assignment consistently, or maybe it's a certain unit, and the parent is seeing this at home as well, maybe that teacher's going to be like, hey, you know what? Isaiah's been struggling on this assignment, and this has been consistent. Like, there's just nothing that I have been able to do that's getting him to learn this skill or learn this whole unit by himself. Like, mm-hmm. he's needing a lot of additional support. And this is something that's probably been a theme over time. And at this point, the teacher's probably done that small group, as well as done a very intentional, some type of intervention, tried to maybe ask Isaiah, oh, you know what? Like, I need you to come in.
Why Isaiah?
I don't know why Isaiah. That's a great question.
I'm listening.
I've never even had an Isaiah. So
I know. I've never taught an Isaiah either. I'm sitting here like,
I don't know why Isaiah's on my mind. But So Isaiah, we're really trying to make sure that Isaiah gets all of the resources that he needs. So
based on what the deficits that we see. It's also interesting when we think about parent referrals, because I feel like most of the time we don't get parent referrals because they don't know that they can refer, right? They're just like, oh, they're having difficulties. Not, this sounds really off, right?
Exactly.
But then some parent referrals we get, like some parents really know that their kid is off, or like they came from a school before and got evaluated but didn't get an IEP. Like, I had a kid. I'm thinking about a very specific kid and a very specific mom. That's my dog. She's my dog for real.
Huh.
But she had twins, and they both needed services. One of them needed major services, and one of them actually ended up staying back. But the school before basically said that he didn't need an IEP. But when he got to me, I'm like, what are y'all talking about?
Right.
But then you do have some parents who are like, I want my kid to get an IEP because I'm trying to get some money.
Yes. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that too.
Yeah.
Because like, that is kind of the other side of it. And it's about, like, you're not trying to give your child this IEP so that they can use it in a way to enable behaviors. This IEP is to literally be a tool so that they can gain more access to the curriculum. And whatever they're currently getting it's not working. So the IEP is being put in place to help them to get it to work. And then also that's something else that we got to mention is that, like, even if you want your child to be evaluated, you can have them evaluated. And then after you get that evaluation, you can determine whether or not you do want them to exactly get the IEP.
Sometimes it helps. I don't actually know if I think the family I'm thinking about did this, but sometimes it helps just to know what your child is diagnosed with.
Yes.
Because then you can move forward with whatever holistic practices.
Exactly.
Like, you can do your own research at home without having to have an IEP.
Absolutely.
But that evaluation process, like Jihad already said, is really based on the parents, and you don't, even if you have the evaluation, you don't have to move forward with the IEP process.
Yeah.
So when we think about the timing and the communication around IEPs, there is certain criteria so that there's no lag on the process, and so that the process is not like, the process is not sped up or like brushed over.
Right.
I would like to say that, but I have felt sometimes that the IEP process has been like brushed over because there's a deadline.
Yeah. So yes, but I think about it like this. I use this idea of the 60-30 kind of model, and the 60 days is so like after the parent signs off on the student being evaluated, the school now has 60 days to complete that evaluation.
Mm.
Why so long? Evaluations take a long time if you want to get accurate data. And when you're trying to assess a child for their disability, that's not a process that you should be rushing. And you should, and also you have to remember, these students are normally in communities that I've served and are doing this test during the academic day.
During the academic day.
So they're also being pulled out during different times where they probably would be learning content as well. So I think that that's something else that we have to like take into account. But so they have 60 days to kind of get that evaluation. And then after that 60 days is up, they have 30 days to then write the IEP.
If the parent says that they
want it. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. And writing IEPs is always interesting because as from a teacher perspective, you know, they'd be asking me like, what math goals do we have? And we'll talk about goals in a moment too. But I then have to figure out what the child's deficits are. Even if the original worry, the parents were like, hey, my child can't write, my child can't read, I still have to give math goals.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's easy because it's like, let me just give you grade level goals. But then sometimes it's hard because I've been told that I have to give a goal that's based on the grade level standard. But if he or she has issues with math, and a standard around long division, but you don't know what 8 divided by 2 is.
Right.
That's third grade, but you in sixth grade. That's always a difficult part for me.
But, and it's twofold there, because I think that on one end of it, like, yes, we want that student to be on grade level, but the other end of it is like, I don't always like that approach. And the reason why is if that student does go to a different school, or if that student eventually is going to go to a different teacher, and that teacher then isn't going to know that that student was working towards a certain grade level standard that was beneath the grade level.
That is so true.
And like, yes, they can figure this out by the diagnostic assessment, but the whole purpose of an IEP is to make sure that you are meeting the unique learning needs of that child. So I think that there are schools that are able to kind of take, like, private schools, I think that they probably have systems in place to support that. But
I need to talk to some private school teachers.
A lot of public schools don't have the resources to make sure that communication loop is kind of closed. And that's why I don't like saying, okay, you know what, like, let's do the grade level standard. I'm like, nope, let's actually
let's
do the second
are,
grade
so
because
know.
That's where he's at.
What's wrong with you? And then another thing about timing is that to know, especially with, well, timing and communication, really,
yes,
with parents, is that parents or family members receive the IEP prior to the meeting. Well, teachers do too when they do it right.
Right.
So that family, it's usually a thick document. I've had it. It's just thick and there's lots of words. But you do receive it beforehand so that everybody that's involved in decision making has it in front of them before, so they can figure out if there's changes that need to be made or if there's mistakes. And I've caused some mistakes. People be lazy, just copy and paste stuff. And I'm like, that is
names,
not her
age,
name.
Right. All of it. That is so true.
In the world.
And I was even thinking there was something else that you said about that. But receiving that documentation prior to the meeting is so important. And that's what I'm going to say. Even the evaluation is something that parents can receive. And I think that that's something that's also not discussed. So like, you can go into details to see, oh, okay, like, is this a sensory like processing deficiency, or is this something else that to where he, is it a computation kind of problem that he wasn't able to solve, computation problems? So like that 3+3 or something.
I've been
like
in those meetings, like to explain the evaluation.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It goes over my head.
It does. I'm like, sis, you was not using layman terms, but I've been in there with a white woman who's done the evaluation and a black woman who's done evaluation, and it's very different.
I agree.
Culturally relevant language is very different, and that's why it's super important to get more black educators in here.
I agree.
But I also, and little black kids respond different to white women than they respond to black women, and that's that. That's just period. So I've had a situation where a little boy, his evaluation said his IQ was like a 4. Something crazy. And I'm sitting here like,
come on now. Right.
He was playing with you.
Right.
And you didn't have the sense in your mind to be like, oh, let me go see if one of his teachers, like, let me go lean on the community.
Exactly.
To see if like one of the teachers can get him right. Yep. She came back to me and told me, mind you, she had him for like an hour or something. She came back to me and told me that he was like being defiant. Why would you keep him for an hour if he was being defiant? Why didn't you just bring him back to either come to class or to have me support you in getting him to be on task?
Right.
Because I could talk to him and he'd get there. So that's another thing. That's why we really want parents and family members to be involved in the IEP process, period. But also like communicating, asking questions, because misdiagnoses do happen because it is based on your child. And it's based on what your child gives. And if you know that your child is having an assessment, tell them the day before to focus. They're going to have an assessment so that they don't think it's la la land.
Right.
And we get to just chill out and have fun.
And that's why I really have to say a shout out to Dr. Reed, because that was something that I feel like kind of felt underneath my radar until I took this assessments course. And our shout out to also Dr. Cameron at Howard. She literally told us, she was like, I may not be the best person to test your child. And the reason why is because there are literally different experiences that you may have had with your child to where they respond to you differently.
Right.
And that's like point blank period. That's like whatever test a child is doing. Like they're going to test different with people that they actually have a relationship with. And so it's very important that there are more Black educators because they're able to connect. And so that child, Dr. Reed, because there would be times in which she would be like, oh, you know what? Like, no, I know you can do this. And maybe you could just need like a quick pep talk.
Right. You
can
do this.
That shutting down stuff, I really don't like when some assessors come in and just make assumptions off of students.
And enable
them. Know their true potential.
Please. I'm a pusher.
I was like, oh, where are you going?
I don't know. That was from a movie I was quoting. But I was telling my roommate the other day that I be quoting movies and people know what I'm talking about, so that just sound crazy. And this was an example, and now it's recorded.
Oh, wow. You know how I have my amazing roommates who are quoting all types of movies.
I know Kurt quote Mean Girls.
Too much. Yeah, oh.
And that was for Mean Girls.
Oh, thanks.
Anyways,
God
is not with pop culture.
Not with it today.
So when talking about eligibility for IEPs, and this would be like just a couple quick hits. So when a child gets tested, and Jahai kind of taught me this, so I'm going to regurgitate it. When a child gets tested, they get a diagnosis, and they are technically under that disability category for 3 years. And then they can get reevaluated to see if they're in another disability category.
Mm-hmm.
Woo, I know my stuff. Holler at a player.
Mm-hmm.
That's important because, you know, with tests, there's already some biases, like none of them, like there's just some questions on the reliability sometimes, because you could have one tester and they would diagnose you this and another tester who would diagnose you this. Another thing. So it's great that there's a process to be reevaluated, but it's also great that there's a duration that you have to stay under that disability so we can ensure that we're getting you the resources that you need if you do have it. And then the terms of getting, if you get reevaluated and your academics actually aren't being impacted anymore, so it's kind of like you've like grown out of it or you've had all the necessary supports that you need and now it's like you don't have the disability anymore. You really may not have the disability anymore. Anymore. Why am I not enunciating? And so now you no longer need the IEP.
Right.
Yes.
And I think that you, just like you said earlier, that teachers and parents can raise concerns. So like even in that 3-year period, a teacher or a parent can also raise concerns if they feel like that disability is no longer impacting the student's access to education, or if they feel like the disability doesn't correlate anymore and they need to like do an emergency meeting and do another evaluation to make sure that they're really meeting that need.
I've never had that happen.
Yeah, I think that, and that's another issue though, but we ain't gonna go down that rabbit hole. So yes, and so about goals, I think that this is kind of something that people probably hear, but you're probably like, how do you even come up with goals? And goals are generally established by students' present levels of performance. And what does that mean? You take the test that the student has been doing, use the evaluation, you use quizzes, you use classwork, you use parents' concerns, you use the teacher concerns. You take all of that and you build out this idea of what is called the present levels of performance. And that's basically, oh, so Isaiah is a student who is X years old, who has been pushing forward and has been not really struggling. He's been struggling in this area and that area. And so then your goals are going to be tailored towards the areas that the student may be struggling in. And just kind of how, like Lindsay was saying before, you're not going to typically have goals for every single subject. It's only based off of the subjects that the student, that the student has issues in.
Yeah, that's always tricky as a teacher too, because I'm like, oh, he don't have, I'm like, oh, he doesn't have math goals? I've had kids, I'm like, why doesn't he have math goals?
Yes.
Why does he have ELA goals and not math goals? And then the next one, when we redid the IEP, and then they gave him math goals. I'm like, thank you. You
right.
Lost your dang mind.
And I did leave a little tidbit out, and then we're going to get going a little deeper about this later, are goals are not just academic. There also are behavior goals, and there also are occupational therapy goals, and we'll dive a little deeper into that a little later.
So when we talk about implementing an actual IEP, so there, just a quick summary, there's a disability that your child has. We have a list of resources we could potentially give them, but we have goals that we want to set in place to get your child out of the disability or have them, they may still have the disability, but then they're able to still show reasonable academic growth that is on grade level. So in order for those goals to be met, there has to be some practice to it, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this thing called service hours. So just think about, this was when the child is getting the services, the specific services that they need. And there's two different types. There's push in and there's pull out. And I'm wondering if you guys can guess what a push in hour is. Now, push in is when somebody who, it's usually some adult, and it really varies based on what the goal is, but some adult is giving push in hours. So they are pushing into the classroom. So their body is in the classroom. The general ed teacher is teaching, but there's another adult in the room that is supporting that child in order for them to access the information that the general ed teacher is giving.
Yes.
But sometimes there are some goals that are a little more severe, or they're better suited being taught outside of the classroom because it limits distractions for multiple reasons. There's a reason kids can be pulled out. So then that adult will come to the door and be like, hey, I need Isaiah, and then pull Isaiah out of the classroom and give them some one-on-one work or some small group work that is related to their goals or related to the content being taught that day. And then they push them back into the, then they put them back into the classroom.
Exactly. And then I think another thing to point out is sometimes these push in and pull out hours are to be so that teachers can pre-teach different content. So it's not always the case that whoever is doing that service hours is going to be teaching exactly what they're going over that day. At schools, I would say that really have the resources to, like Atari talks about this all the time, like she pre-teaches her content so that the following day, the student is ready to has a better understanding of what's actually going on.
I've heard of doing that before.
It's definitely very challenging, I feel like, as far as planning goes, because I feel like teachers are already overwhelmed with a lot. But I think
I'm supposed to pre-teach what I teach. What the hell? And my thing is, then what's I haven't done that because I'm just like, well, I'm just going to teach and then reteach.
Right.
Because I don't have time to pre-teach to a small group, so right. I don't reteach to a group that I know. At least I know what they, I know what I told them already.
Yeah.
Because I could pre-teach to this small group, teach the whole group, then it's people in the small group that didn't get it. Now I got to do a reteach group.
Right.
I'm like, what?
This is a lot. But I guess that is like why we're pushing for this new inclusion, or this inclusion model. I don't want to call it new because I feel like we've been doing it for some time. But I think inclusion basically looks different on the school and like the resources, because sometimes you have that special education teacher who can do that, and sometimes you don't. Like,
sometimes
that's just
you don't.
How it is.
Sometimes these special education teachers also need IEPs.
No, and that's very, very true. And that's no shade. It's just like, it is the truth. Like,
that was one thing I learned this past school year, is that there are some adults that need IEPs.
Absolutely.
There's some adults that need supports, but it's like, it makes me understand people a little bit more, but it is frustrating because like I can't teach you and teach him. Like you as the adult have to figure it out. Why? Because I had to figure it out. Like, we're getting paid to figure it out.
But this is why I said what I said, that I feel like I feel like teacher preparation programs should more so teach from the perspective of a special education type of model.
That's not going to make people smart. Adults get it faster. I mean, I agree with what you're saying.
It
I don't
may
think-
not.
That my specific example
is to is not adults. I get
no
you. I get
it's
you.
Not it's okay. Not teacher preparation. You just need to read the math book and ask questions about it, but you're not doing that. But anyways, then we also think about, so we have service hours, but then kids can also get testing accommodations. I know that this is also like super, not super popular, but like I knew people in Howard who got testing accommodations. And so they were going to separate spaces to test, or testing on different days. That's a similar to what happens in schools.
You'll
have testing accommodations that are similar towards the end of the IEP. Lots of students to get like small group testing. Some of them might get like read aloud on assessments that are like mathematics assessments, sometimes ELA assessments. And then they also get these testing accommodations on a statewide test. And so sometimes those will also consist of breaks or unlimited time. That's a big one. The unlimited time is the big one, because that is, I have issues with that, because I just think they ought to get unlimited time.
I agree.
I don't get it.
And
all unlimited time.
Especially because I just feel like these high stakes test type of situation, it just doesn't really, I think, because like we talked about on the episode with teacher Jasmine, like how she was just saying that it gives students anxiety. And so if we don't have to talk about like the whole time aspect, then you can actually teach a student, like, take your time. Like, you have all the time in the world. That just really shifts the whole dynamic. And so I the hope is that students won't be as stressed out. But another thing that we got to talk about is just circling back to the fact that parents literally have autonomy over everything. Like, you can choose how many push-in hours a student has, how many pull-out hours a student has. And I think it's very important for parents to know that this can also change. Like, if you see that something, if maybe you go visit and you say, hell, you know what? I don't like the way that he's being pulled out during this subject specifically. Like, can we do it this way? You can make an amendment. You can change that IEP
at any time.
You have to raise that concern though. And sometimes there will be teachers who may raise it, but generally speaking, I feel like it's best when parents say, hey, you know what? I don't think that this would work for my child.
Everything is better when the parent says it. Exactly. I know that parents oftentimes, like, it's your first time, maybe your first time parenting, maybe your first time with an IEP, whatever. Mm-hmm. I know that it might feel weird to be like, oh, well, the teacher knows best, but you literally determine everything. And I really want to empower parents, because an email goes a long way.
Whew.
An email goes a very long way.
Yeah.
You need to be asking your student. Here's a little tip we're going to embed in here. If your student has an IEP and they have push out hours, you need to know what days they're getting pulled out. So if Isaiah gets pulled out on Wednesday, when Wednesday come along and Isaiah come home, you need to ask Isaiah, did you get somebody pull you out today? Did you work with your occupational therapist? Because if they didn't, then people are not upholding their legally binding agreement, and then need to make time to make up those hours, or it's a lawsuit.
Yep.
But really though, I mean, that's a spectrum, like make up hours to lawsuit, but like that It is their legal right.
Right.
Like legal right that you and paper that you signed, everybody agreed upon. And so now it's their job to ensure that the agreed upon statement, aka the IEP, is being met.
The needs are met because this is a document that says that my child is learns in a unique way, and these are the resources that we're going to apply to help them learn in mm-hmm. that unique way. And so there's nothing that a parent should feel. You should not feel bad about trying to tell that principal, hey, he missed this week. So when is this going to be made up?
Yep.
There is nothing yes. wrong with that.
When's it going to be made up?
There's nothing wrong with that. So definitely
and
take advantage of
that. They need to
make it up. Absolutely.
I had a professor for like a grad course via Trinity that I did. And she was like, a sped class that mm-hmm. she was teaching us. And she was telling us that her daughter has ADHD. Or ADD, which is very uncommon in girls, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she was white. I just like to know people's races. So she was telling me that they were trying to they had so many pullout hours for her. And she was the mom was in an IEP meeting, like, no, this is not going to work. But the teachers were trying to tell her, like, oh, no, she has to have these pullout hours. And mind you, the mom is like, she's like, do you know who I am?
Exactly.
Like,
absolutely.
I study this. I teach this for a living. How are you going to tell me? And she was like, yeah, my daughter's staff don't like me after school. I'm like, well, good. They don't have to like you, but they will respect you because you are a boss.
Amen. Amen.
But literally, though, like, they're
that is so real.
Like, sometimes it is frustrating to have parents on you every single moment about something. But I would like to be in a space. And I know the grass is always greener on the other side, but I would like to be in a space where parents are on me about their students learning all the time. I would love that.
Yeah.
Because that means you're also on your kids.
Exactly.
Collective accountability.
We're
type
all
of
on
thing.
The same page. We're all on the same page. I do love that. I really do.
So there's some related services that we want to talk to you about. Because yes. Shahad mentioned earlier that there's like academic growth goals, but then there's also a side that's called related services. And so these are, it's like just anything outside of academics.
Yeah.
So this can be in your IEP can include services from a psychologist, services from an occupational therapist, mm-hmm. services from, and people that don't know what an occupational therapist is, they kind of handle like physical day-to-day activities. So if your student's having a hard time holding their pencil correctly, if you don't hold your pen in the standard way, you might have needed an occupational therapist.
Yeah.
Just FYI for those people.
The full-fisted grip.
The full-fisted grip. Yeah, it's not traditional, but, you know, you get it how you live. Or like Jahad was telling me that he had an occupational therapist teach a student how to tie their shoes.
Yeah, that's...
Because that is also a service that's needed.
Like in the fifth grade. And so
yeah.
By fifth grade, we hope that you would know how to tie your shoes at that point.
By fifth grade, right. Yeah. So you could also have a social worker that's there. You could have some goals that are around like speech. And so you have a speech language pathologist that is providing a service. I know that I had a student, actually the same student with who I talked about earlier, who was messing around during the evaluation. His stutter is crucial. Crucial. I'm just about to say his name. And I really have to tell him sometimes, I don't understand what you're saying. I have to literally show him to flick his tongue with the
right,
L.
Right, exactly.
And the speech language pathologist showed me how to tell him to pronounce the L's.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a very deliberate thing that you don't always learn just from listening to other people
right.
or from seeing other people. So those are some related services. And so we know that IEP goals, they're academic, sometimes they're non-academic. But generally, we hope that you have a better idea of the IEP process.
Yes.
Because we want it to feel honest and transparent. And the bottom line is that parents and families have final say.
And ask those questions.
Ask
that
questions.
Why. And I feel like Lindsay does a great job of that. And she's like, well, I need the rationale behind this.
Yeah.
And
I didn't know why.
Every goal, every service hour, get that understanding so that you know. And so when you following up on that, you know exactly, oh, well, you said that this is supposed to help Isaiah in this way.
Paper
and
trail.
And how are they doing it?
Paper trail and so, yeah. Ask why. Because it's your right and it's your child's right.
This week's call to action is for you to continue emailing us with any questions you have about ADD and ADHD. And we'd be happy to address them during the last episode of our mini series.
And with that, again, please check on your friends, your family, folks in your community. But really, y'all, check in on yourself.
Yes.
And there are a lot of emotions that are happening right now, a lot of introspection. And I just want people to find something I'm working on is finding the balance between expressing my emotion and feeling it versus analyzing the why.
Whoa.
And I think I've been cutting myself short of actually feeling my emotions and trying to jump to the analysis. And it's just a misstep in the process. So make sure you're checking on yourselves. Feel free to feel your emotions. Stay safe and be sane.
Yes, and peace, love, and light.
Hootie hoo!